Many folks deal with anxiety, which can be debilitating at times. But what happens when we let our anxiety become our inspiration? Hello, this is Sam, and you're listening to another episode of Supernormal. If you deal with anxiety, you know that once you find something that works to help, that becomes a lifesaver, and you use it all of the time. Be it napping, chocolate, medication, or cannabis, those things become your go-to. For today's guest, that go-to is art, which led her to becoming a popular Instagram artist.
So, my name is Christine Rye. I am an artist and an illustrator based in New York City, New York born and raised. My most prominent work would be my webcomic series, Yeah, It's Chill, that I mainly post on Instagram. And it's a semi-autobiographical work where I have a caricature of myself named Christine, but it's spelled with a K, doing just a bunch of stuff. My Harry Potter house would probably be Gryffindor, according to Pottermore. So I took the test.
I disagree with that. Really? I feel like you give me some serious either Ravenclaw or Hufflepuff vibes. I'm not sure which one. You seem very intelligent. Not that Hufflepuffs aren't intelligent. Yeah. They're more creative, though. So maybe you're like a quasi half-between house kind of situation.
Yeah, I also identify with Ravenclaw, but I feel like Ravenclaws are more bookish. I mean, I am bookish, but I also like messing stuff up.
Right,
like going out there.
Yeah, being more creative and like hands-on and just in the thick of it.
Yeah.
I feel like Ravenclaws study things much too much before they actually go participate in it.
Yeah. I mean, not to denigrate Ravenclaw.
No. No. My partner's a Ravenclaw, so I understand. I myself am a Slytherin. Mm-hmm. I'm very sly and cunning, but not in like a creepy manipulative way. Like they book us in the book or bill us in the book. It's not like that. But that's because Draco is the only Slytherin that they focus on. I would love to see an actual like movie about each one of the individual houses and all the people within them. That would be some fun shit to produce.
I agree.
Okay, so I want to ask you a question about Christine, and why did you do Christine with a K?
So it kind of started out as a joke. Mm-hmm. Whenever I get very anxious, I kind of feel like I become this anxious persona, and it's not like me directly, so it's kind of like a derivative or a permutation of me. So it's like a derivative of the name.
Got
Christine,
it,
but with a K.
Got
so that's
it.
Where that came from.
So when you started Yeah, It's Chill, was it kind of like, I know you said it's autobiographical in a sense, but was it also like a way to relieve your anxiety and get it out there?
Yeah, absolutely. The first couple of comics that I drew, I was procrastinating on a work project, and I was just, like, drawing. And I was a project manager before I became an artist full-time. So I was on a really tight deadline, and I had drank way too much coffee. So I wrote, I drew a little comic of, like, the very anxious, over-caffeinated me. And then I kind of just continued to draw out, like, me in these anxious circumstances.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it initially definitely started as, like, me just relieving some stress and like expressing that I feel like it looks like I'm putting like I'm have all my shit together, but like on the inside I'm just like twitching
and dying a little slowly every day. You know, that's so interesting to me because I have so many content creators or like full-time passion project people that come on the podcast, and I think that I'm so drawn to your type of people because it's so empowering to know that even in this world of craziness you can still do what you love and somehow make a living off of it. So what was that transition from project manager to full-time artist like for you, and how fucking crazy did you get?
Well, I mean, I'm still in that transition. It's still definitely nerve-wracking to find freelance projects all the time, but I didn't jump right into it. I knew that I wanted to make the transition, so I saved up some money. So I was like, okay, I have like this much runway. So even if I don't find any freelance projects, I'm not, like, I'm going to be fine. Yeah, now just like finding all of the projects takes up so much time.
Yeah.
And it's so hard. But I have some other friends that are full-time creatives and artists too. So we all work by ourselves, like huddled over and like in front of our laptops or computers. So like,
oh yeah. You can see how small this room is. Christine is the first person I've had in almost a year that has actually come to interview in person. So we're sitting in my studio, which is a box. So I totally understand the idea of isolation and needing people to commiserate with.
So yeah, we meet up like my friend Samantha, who runs the Instagram account and stationery company Violet Claire. We meet up like once a month to, it's usually more than once a month, but lately she just moved into a new studio in Greenpoint, so she's like super busy, and I'm working on a couple of book stuff, so we're really busy. But we always catch up and work from a coffee shop and just like commiserate.
That's so nice to do it with other people and know that you're not alone. Especially because when you go off on your own to do something, you're in complete control from start to finish of how that project is done. You're in control usually of how you manage your time. I'm sure you have a deadline that the project is due, but you're in control of everything, like financial stuff, tax stuff, making sure you get the right documents so you can, you know, have all your stuff in order. How do you enforce knowing, you know, how much time it costs to put into a piece and how much you should charge for it versus like what they want to pay you rather? Because I feel like people underestimate the quality versus how much they want to pay.
Yeah. This is something that I talk about with my creative friends all the, like, pricing, I feel like, is one of the biggest things that everyone talks about all the time, but no one wants to talk about it because talking about money can feel kind of awkward and weird,
especially as a woman,
which it should not be. So I'm just so grateful for all of my friends that who have been so transparent about how much they charge and how much they get paid for things, so then I have a frame of reference. So I kind of, if I do have a bigger project, I start out by just asking them what their budget is, so I know if our expectations are aligned, and usually it is pretty aligned. And if they're going lower than I feel like my work should be, I kind of just negotiate back, and I'm just like, well, for this much time and this whatever scope of project, like, this is how much I'm expecting. And usually we end up meeting in the middle. And then if I really don't know, I just text. I have a group chat with my other friend, Haley, who is the Instagram account. Haley drew this.
Oh, okay.
And she and I and Samantha just like talk out how much we think something should cost. Then I put it out there. So yeah.
That's nice to have that. I definitely think you need a frame of reference, because what are you to do? Like, even if you Google something, they're not going to have an accurate portrayal of the actual work you're doing. Like to do a portrait for somebody that you're painting is going to be so different than making some graphics on Instagram. And knowing the difference between those two mediums, as well as like Photoshop versus by hand versus mixed media, all of those things are important. And I think people also forget the fact that you have to pay for all of these tools that you use. You know, I'm sure you use Photoshop or InDesign, and you have to pay for your Adobe membership, and you have to pay for your iPad or whatever you use to draw on. People don't think about those costs. And that's what you're paying for. You know, I think sometimes people get caught up in the fact that you're a creative, so you're just making it with your hands. Why is she charging me this much? It's like, no, bitch, I still have bills to pay, you know?
Yeah, and it's also, I feel like people just undervalue creative work. Like, being an artist and being a creative person is a specialized skill. Like, you had to learn how to do all of this. And if I feel like a project doesn't recognize that you're paying me to create something out of my own head that takes like a lot of just input to do, then I don't take the project. Because it's like, I don't know, if you don't value the work, I'm not gonna
do it for you. I want to talk a little bit about like your creative process, because for me, like, this part is very easy. When I'm talking to somebody, you're my like almost inspiration, you know, like, you're where I draw my energy from. So this part is super duper easy for me. It's the editing afterward that's hard. Knowing that I can pay attention to every single nuanced detail of that editing process, so I can make sure that not only is the product something you're going to be proud of, but it doesn't take away from like our original conversation. I don't like to edit stuff out that, you know, puts things out of context. Mm-hmm. I like to make sure that you sound professional in it, even if you're nervous. Like, I know what part of those things are. Some part is like nerve wracking, mm-hmm. and you may like stutter or say more ums or say more like. So I don't want you to hear it and it not reflect how you actually sound in real life. Mm-hmm. But all those things take time, right? Yeah. And like, I need to be in the right mental space. And if I'm like depressed or anxious or, you know, dealing with something in my own life, it's very hard to want to listen to someone else's conversation. Mm-hmm. And I need to be in that state and in that like good, clear space of energy. Mm-hmm. So I don't think people realize that you can't just like slap creative shit out,
yeah.
you know, like it's pancakes down a griddle that's, you know, a conveyor belt. You have to really be in that place. So what is that place like for you and how do you get yourself there?
I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I've been working on a few different creative projects and kind of the energy that I have to have is different for different types of creative projects. Mm. Like if I'm creating an entire world in a project, I have to, I don't know, kind of feel rejuvenated and refreshed. But if I'm working on something that's just like, like I know what I have to do and it's like a graphic design project and right. I'm like, okay, well these are the elements that I need to put in it, so let me just like crank it out, and it's kind of more automatic. So it kind of depends, but lately when I've needed to just like recharge, because I am working on a lot of original work right now, I go out into nature. Like my friends and I have recently been getting into, well, I mean I've been getting into hiking, they've been into hiking. So we go upstate and we've been a couple weekends now. Okay. And last weekend I was out on Long Island in the Hamptons and just was like, we were right by the beach. So I walked to the beach and was like by the pool. So I just have
all of that.
It was so
like
nice.
A cleansing of your soul and your mind. And you're just like, this is where I belong.
And then I like come back and I'm just like, okay, I'm a fresh blank slate now and I can make everything that I have to make.
Yeah.
But for the comics, those I have a running note on my notes app that I just put down ideas. So I kind of have a bunch of ideas that I can draw. So it's easier because like when I am feeling replenished, I just like write down all of these ideas and do a brain dump. So even when I'm not really feeling super creative, I still have all of these ideas. And
that's smart. Yeah.
And all of the elements and characters are the same in the comic. So it's easy to just like draw something if I already have the idea. So yeah, it kind of depends on the project. Yeah.
Now, what is it like for you to balance? And I don't know, and if you don't want to answer this, this is totally fine too, but like, yeah, it's chill. And if it doesn't bring you in any money, how is it balancing that thing that gets you exposure with the things that actually bring you income?
Yeah. Yeah, this is also something that I've been thinking about a lot lately because my Instagram account has been getting a bunch of exposure. Like Mindy Kaling reposted me last week or 2 weeks ago. And this morning when we're recording this, Reese Witherspoon's book club reposted one of my book comics.
That's awesome.
So
it's they're really friends.
Exciting. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really exciting.
Yeah.
But it's also like these things don't bring in any income.
Right.
But it kind of just, I kind of see Instagram and the projects that don't bring an income as a portfolio. So you can kind of see all of the things that I'm capable of doing. So that's kind of how I see the Instagram and other creative projects that I do that don't pay me. It's like kind of just showing the things that I can do. And that's part of the work, I feel like. So it's so easy to get so overwhelmed by social media.
Fuck yeah, it is.
And then like, I don't know.
It's hard.
It is hard. And, like, you have to worry about the Instagram algorithm.
Yes.
And, like, if you don't post at the right time, no one sees it. Like, I did a post the other day that I really liked, and only 10% of my followers saw it on their feeds. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what's even the point of doing this? But then I kind of think that this is part of the job. Like, this is my portfolio. This is what I'm doing. So it kind of makes it easier. And it's also really fun. Like, I really like making the comics. So I also do it as a stress reliever, like when I'm doing the other creative projects.
Right.
So they kind of like feed into each other and balance. There's kind of a balance, I feel like right now. But yeah, it is hard to spend hours and hours on a project and no one's ever going to pay me for it. And like people might not see it.
Right.
So that's why you kind of, or at least for me, I kind of have to have the validation within myself.
Right.
You know, because it's so, like, if you need external validation, you're never going to get enough of it. So I kind of just have to replenish my own well. And I'm just like, I'm doing this for me. And it's like part of the whole thing. Like, so yeah.
It's the catharsis that keeps you going to do the things that pay you,
yeah.
Right? Like cleansing yourself and just being like, oh yeah, this anxiety relief or this stress relief, or even if it is like, I don't want to tell people that they need external gratification, but mm-hmm. let's be fucking real. Like when yeah. Reese Witherspoon's book club was gonna re-gram something of yeah. you, or Mindy Kaling acknowledges you, like yeah. that is an exciting moment. And
so exciting.
You can't live for those moments, mm-hmm. but getting them and getting to the point where your content is quality enough that those moments can happen mm-hmm. is a reflection of your hard work.
Yeah.
And I do think that you should be allowed to be proud of those things.
Yeah.
And you know, balancing the need for those things with mm-hmm. the need for or the acknowledgement that it is a catharsis, that's really where I think the issue lies.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to find these pieces that will pay you, mm-hmm. how do you go about searching for them? Is it just like through your network? And mm-hmm. if it is, how did you build that network?
Yeah, all of the projects that I'm doing or have done have definitely been through my network. Networking is hard and weird. Mm. And
yes, I hate it so much.
It's, yeah. And like, no one ever really teaches you about networking.
Right.
And like, so I went to college. I was a biology major and thought that I was going to be a doctor. Mm. So I was just like, oh, I don't have to do any of this business stuff. Like, I have a path. Like, I know what I have to do. Mm. So I like was working along like this set path. And it wasn't until after college, my last semester, I started working at a couple of startups and a couple of businesses that I was like, this is kind of more like what I'm into.
Right.
So then I was kind of like thrown into this world of where you just have to make connections with yeah. people. And networking is kind of billed as like this really professional, like weird thing that no one really knows the rules for. And I've kind of just learned that I don't know, you just have to treat people like people and like become just like friends with people. And
yeah.
that's what networking really is.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like I would go to these networking events for young professionals and
they're mortifying.
They're
so fucking worse. Uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's when I have had my experiences with networking, like even just how I described to you off camera or off mic, off camera, fucking idiot, off mic, which I've said on the podcast before, you know, like the process of me getting this podcast happening, mm-hmm. it's like you're constantly networking because yeah. you're like, well, I have 40, 50 episodes banked up or mm-hmm. done. I have a graphic design portfolio. My Instagram fucking sucks right now. But by the time this airs, my Instagram yeah. will be great because I've been working.
I love your new logo.
Thank you. Oh, I'll show you after this is done my layout. It's so disheartening though because speaking of balancing, like mm-hmm. I run my company's Instagram for the job that I work at that pays me during the day. Mm-hmm. And then I am so exhausted when I come yeah. home that if I'm editing and doing all these things and recording episodes, like I have no time to like make beautiful graphics. Mm-hmm. So that's why I took the hiatus for July. Mm-hmm. I was like, I just got to fucking crank shit out
yeah.
while I'm at home and then post it later. I can't be doing like a catch up moment.
Yeah.
But when, you know, I'm networking because I'm like, I've got as much or more than these podcasts that are on like Gimlet or WNYC mm-hmm. and I have just as many followers as some of them mm-hmm. and some of those podcasts follow me mm-hmm. but it's like I do this all by myself so no mm-hmm. one's listening. I mean people are listening yeah. but you know what I mean, like it's not millions.
Yeah,
there's not millions of downloads like Tim Ferriss. And that's what the frustrating part is it mm-hmm. doesn't truly matter how good your content is
yeah.
if people aren't going to believe in you.
Yeah.
So I feel like the whole process of networking mm-hmm. is just making friends so people believe in you. And they're yeah. like, oh, wait, like you actually do good stuff.
Yeah.
I told you I did good stuff before we were friends, but now you believe me. So that's yeah. the hurdle, I feel like. So when you started making those friends and getting those connections, mm-hmm. where did you find those people?
I've honestly found everyone basically on Instagram.
That's what I do too.
Yeah. Yeah, like I think one reason why it was kind of not as much of like a teeth pulling experience mm-hmm. to try and network was because I had been putting out a lot of Instagram content and just like stuff out there so
right.
people can kind of be validated that like I'm a real person who like does real things.
Yeah.
Because it can be kind of, especially at these networking events that you go to mm-hmm. and like everyone is claiming to do all of this stuff and like
yes.
a lot of people are not
right.
or they're like grossly over exaggerating
or not good.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Let's be real, some people just kind of suck
yeah.
and they're still trying to network.
Yeah. And it's just like, I don't know. I've been to a couple of events where they kind of like explain that the best way to network is like horizontal networking, like you network with your peers.
Right.
And so that's kind of just been what I'm doing, like befriending other people who are doing the things that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then eventually people who have more experience and have more pull have also been seeing my stuff, and they're just like, oh, she has friends. Like,
people can vouch for you. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's what's important.
Yeah. So, yeah, the first person that I reached out to was Samantha, who runs the Instagram account. She did this wall for Freeform that was on Wythe Avenue in Williamsburg.
Okay.
And I, like, walked by it all the time, and I was just like, oh, my God, I love her and her work. So I just DM'd her on Instagram, and I was like, hey, I just walked by your wall today. It's really great. I love your work. And she was just like, I live right by that wall. Let's hang out. And I was like, yes.
That's so nice. See, like, I feel when – not that she was in a position of power because, like you said, it's horizontal. But I feel like when someone compliments you, like, if you have the mental space and the energy and the ability to do so, it's so wonderful to reach back out and say, like, yeah, let's connect, you know? Yeah. Like, if that person's doing the scary part of reaching out to you first – it's so wonderful to just reciprocate and be like, yeah, I'll take the time, you know, like, because I think that especially as women, we have to like be there for each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
And hold each other's arms, you know, and hands and just be like, I'm here for you. Like, pat you on the back. I recognize what you're doing. I appreciate you recognizing me. Let's continue to frolic through this meadow of, you know, entrepreneurship together. So that's so gorgeous and beautiful that she did that for you.
Yeah. And everyone else that I've reached out to, I mean, they've mostly been women, like other women helping me out, which has been incredible, but also kind of baffling to think about that, like 10 or 20 years ago, there's no way that I could have done any of this. Well, because first, social media wasn't a thing, but also because there's are more women now who are in positions of power who can kind of like turn around and pull people back in.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like without those people blazing the trail, I wouldn't be able to do any of these things that I'm doing. Like I got a literary agent because an artist, Lauren Brantz, who I love, she works at BuzzFeed, she wrote about a project that I did, and we ended up like talking, and then I expressed that I really wanted to get into traditional publishing, and she was like, okay, what types of projects are you into? So I was telling her all of them, and she was like, oh, my agent would actually be really into this. And that's how I got my literary agent, because Lauren was like, I love her. She's amazing.
I love everything that she does, especially like when she draws butts.
Yeah,
her butts make me so happy. Lauren, if you're listening to this, your butts make me so happy. Which is such a small detail that to like really rejuvenate you. But like every time I see a butt that she draws, it genuinely makes my day. But that's amazing. Like I feel like getting somebody just to believe in you, because you're mentioning the difference between you know, let's say 50 years ago and today. I think the real hard part about today versus 50 years ago, although we have the ability to make these connections through DMs, which is how I found you, and 90% of my guests, I would say, have all been through DMs, but I think that today we have so much more competition.
Yeah.
And especially, like, I'm so appreciative of women who aren't going to consider you their competition and say, like, you're doing a project that's fucking fantastic. I do a different type of creative work. Let's combine those two things together and make a separate project. I don't have to jump on your project, but like, let's be friends and let's like collaborate and communicate together. I just feel like there's so much competition today that if you don't have those connections, it's really hard to break through and to get those first couple of people to notice you, which is why I think we end up relying so much on that external gratification, because it's our only sign of like, oh, somebody actually paid attention to me.
Yeah.
Do you find that there are so many people doing what you're doing that that is a struggle?
So I do think about this a lot, but I feel like there's room for everyone.
I do too.
Like, you know, if, especially in creative work, like everything comes from yourself.
Yes.
And there's no one else like yourself. So your voice is unique to you, you know? So yeah, like with creative work and work in general, I feel like there's room for everyone to rise to the top. And it's just a shame that back like 50 years ago, all of these people couldn't have the same say, and like the voice was just very linear. So I feel like now, because so many people are finding their voices and like are having a voice, that there's room for all of it, especially considering that, like, there might seem like there is competition, but, like, a lot of these voices are new, like, not new voices, but
different perspectives.
Yeah, that haven't been given the ability to, like, speak in such a broad way before. So, yeah, I feel like I do have a lot of creative friends, but we never really feel like we're in competition with each other. Mm-hmm. Even if we are up for the same jobs, it's kind of like they're going to pick whoever...
Who makes sense.
Yeah, for them. Yeah. So, yeah, I think I came to this conclusion kind of when I listened or I read an interview with Gigi Hadid and Kendall Jenner, and they were talking about how they're both models, but people who hire each of them are looking for different things.
It makes
a lot of sense. And that kind of changed my perspective on the whole thing. And I'm just like, you know what, Kendall, that's, that makes sense.
Hey folks, I just want to take a moment and say thank you so much for listening. If you're new to the Supernormal fam, thanks for checking us out. To get all this and more straight to your phone, go ahead and subscribe in whatever app or site you're listening on. There's new episodes on Mondays with surprise bonus content. While you're there, leave us a review. It helps get the word out to more people and can help get your girl a sponsor because I am broke. Thanks, now back to the episode.
You know, it's funny, though, because I think that one of my favorite parts about getting these stories out there is, like, I did an episode with Crosston, is how, I think how she says it. And she is Thai, and she also has a Belgian father. Mm-hmm. And her perspective is not very niche in the sense of the cartoons that she does or the content that she creates. But her perspective as a human is so different than other people that I've had on this podcast, because she has, not only is she European, but she's European and a POC.
Yeah.
And that's a different perspective than an American POC. Mm-hmm. So I think that there are so many niche perspectives to come from, because we need to illuminate more perspectives in order to get the full view of what the world really is. Mm-hmm. So that's the beautiful part of having so much competition in content creation, is it's not competition. Mm-hmm. It's just different versions of storytelling and different stories to be told.
Yeah.
So as a creative, what are your favorite stories to draw from, and where do you pull your inspiration from in your life?
My inspiration kind of comes from everywhere. Basically, I didn't really realize where artists got their inspiration, because I thought it was kind of like an ethereal thing that just kind of like flows into you at night, and then like you wake up and you're just like, inspiration. Yeah. But I took this oil painting class in college, and we spent a lot of the class just talking about inspiration and like putting together mood boards and just like putting like places that you can draw from inspiration.
Okay.
So it kind of just comes from everywhere. Like, you have to live your life to
be inspired.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and it can come from anything. Like, it's not some magical thing, you know,
that it's like not a Patronus that flies into your soul.
Yeah, in the middle of the night. Exactly. Like, everyone can get inspired. And so my comics, I usually make them, the overall feeling of the comics, I want them to all be either positive or make people feel seen. So that's just what I start with. I'm just like, okay, everything that I make, I want to be a good impact in the world because I'm putting it out there.
Right.
And I don't ever want to denigrate anyone or anyone else's experiences. So everything is coming from my personal experience, and I never want to like project anything onto anyone else. And the main themes are usually anxiety and like my experiences, fashion and skincare and like hair care and grooming, and reading. So those are basically the overall themes of everything. I'd say the biggest theme is probably just like being a woman, and things that are kind of specific to our experience, because comics and media in general, obviously, you know, it's very male focused and male centric, and like they're the main people who stories are told.
Yep.
So all of my comics are just like,
yes,
I'm a woman, all of my experiences are valid, like nothing that I do is or experience or like is less than something a man does or likes. So I also try to be proud, or just like convey how proud and accepting I am of like all parts of my personality with like everything, you know, because I feel like there needs to be more of that out there. Like,
yes,
things that women are into shouldn't be considered guilty pleasures. Like,
yes,
it or like You know, like, you shouldn't be ashamed to like things that are marketed towards us.
Right,
you know?
And you're not a slut if you decide that you want to wear lipstick.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, everyone should wear crop tops if they want to.
Right, right.
Because they're great,
you
know?
Right. I think that a lot of the content that's out there for women, mm-hmm. women still don't realize that it was created by men, yeah. or at least from a male lens.
Yeah.
Like, we were discussing off mic as well that, like, even the content that I was participating in creating mm-hmm. was still being dictated by male perspectives.
Yeah.
And I hate to say this because sometimes, you know, content creating companies can put a gay man on a project and be like, oh, he's feminine. Mm-hmm. He can understand the female perspective. And it's like, no, that still doesn't work. Like, yeah. that was who one of my executive producers at the time from the job that I hated was a gay mm-hmm. man. And he was fantastic. He made great content. But, like, when it was coming to female perspective things, mm-hmm. there was no woman on that show to be like, yeah, that's actually the right way to do it.
Yeah.
And it really does skew the perception of women in society when yeah. it comes from a male lens. And then we start to kind of cycle that in and
yeah,
believe
like
it and internalize it.
It
and then accept it and move on and say, like, mm-hmm. that's the way it is.
Yeah.
But it's not. So women like you actually creating content that is coming from a female perspective mm-hmm. gives other women the opportunity to reevaluate those lenses and
yeah.
say, okay, this is actually real content from a woman mm-hmm. and I understand what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what's so important about getting non-binary and trans ideas out there as well is mm-hmm. like those are other perspectives of people identifying as non-male in the world
mm-hmm.
and those need to be seen as well.
Yeah.
So when you're participating in content creation, I feel like sometimes when you're coming from your own perspective,
mm-hmm.
people tend to over rationalize things to the point mm-hmm. where they're like saying, okay, this is now how you view the entire world, but that doesn't represent me, and mm-hmm. they get offended.
Yeah.
How do you work with those people in your comment section, if you do at all, or how do you kind of work through the process of saying, like, this is my representation of mm-hmm. myself in the world. I'm not mm-hmm. trying to overrepresent anybody else besides me,
mm-hmm.
and this is what I find humorous, and this is my life.
Yeah. I basically just say that.
Okay.
Like, this is me talking for myself. I'm not talking for or mm-hmm. on the behalf of anyone else. Like, even when I do things that are mental health related or, like, anything related to anxiety or depression, like, I'm just talking about my own experience mm-hmm. in this thing. And, like, I never want to project anything on anyone else. Like,
right.
I'm just here telling my story. And if you can relate to it, then that's great. But I'm not speaking on behalf of you or mm. behalf of anyone. So it's happened a couple of times where I've just had to explain that, like, I'm not talking about every depressed or anxious person.
Right.
Like, I'm talking about me.
Right.
People are usually understanding of that, because I think sometimes when I put content out there, people kind of forget that, like, a person drew this. Like,
yeah.
I made this. Isn't a meme that's just on the internet
right.
for, like, that just magically proliferated out of nothing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I made it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, as long as I just remind the person who's coming at me that, like, this is just me and mm-hmm. I'm not speaking for you.
Yeah.
Then it's usually fine.
Have you had any negative, let's call them customer service interactions where they were really bad and you were just like, fuck this person. They don't get it.
Yeah. So I do occasionally, whenever I post anything specifically about body hair or about race, I get people who are, well, they're usually always men, coming at me, telling me
of course they are
that I'm wrong. And if I feel like someone's coming at me in bad faith and they really just, like, don't care to understand or also just don't see my humanity, I don't interact with them, because I'm just like, this person is not worth my energy when
right.
there's someone who's either telling me something positive that I can interact with or someone who is genuinely confused and I can talk to them. But if they're coming at me and they're just, like, really evil and negative, I just don't.
Bye.
Yeah,
not interested.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a hard balance that I come across, and something I'm trying to reevaluate now
mm-hmm.
is, like, I started this podcast as a catharsis for mm-hmm. myself, similar to how you started your Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
But I did want to elevate people's voices, and I want to get your stories out there so
mm-hmm.
that way you have a place to feel like you're living your truth and it's being celebrated without being skewed.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of transformed into this political activism that I am not good at. Yeah. Like, I have to admit, I'm not good at it. I try my best, mm-hmm. but I have like certain physical limitations. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a chronic illness, mm-hmm. and it does like limit the amount of screen time I can have. Mm-hmm. And I started realizing that people want you to be an ally all the time, mm-hmm. every single second of every single day, on the stage that you have. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't be doing the work unless you're taking pictures of it, mm-hmm. or tweeting about it. Like, any work that you're doing off camera doesn't count to the people of Instagram. Mm-hmm. And that I find really frustrating, because I kind of lost myself in that. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to be so on all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's very draining to your mental health.
Yeah.
You can't be following every single murder and every single situation that has mm-hmm. escalated without having an ability to cleanse.
Yeah.
And like, okay, how do I actually make a difference? Because mm-hmm. I feel like now in Instagram, there's just this echo chamber mm-hmm. of people following each other, putting things up, mm-hmm. and it doesn't really get very far. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of Instagram, that's the beauty of hashtags, that's the beauty of making these political campaigns, is mm-hmm. like, you can get them to other people,
yeah.
but you need to share them with the world. Mm-hmm. So how do you balance your political activism type stuff, or mm-hmm. you're talking about body hair or racial issues mm-hmm. with like, okay, I know I can't fix everything all the time.
Yeah. This is also something that I've been thinking about
a lot. I'm glad we're working on the same things, because it makes me feel a little less alone.
And I don't know, it's really hard and draining to always just like be on top of every single story.
Yeah.
Especially stories of like violence against people who look like me and yeah. who I'm close to. It's just, I don't know, just like very, very draining. So I lately have kind of just been thinking that something that I know that I need, and that I know that a lot of other people who have similar experiences and who like look like me need, are just, we need more joy
right.
in the world. So I have kind of just been thinking that like everyone knows all of the bad things going on in the world. Like everyone, or at least everyone who I'm close to. Like,
in your community.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like we all know what's happening. And we also like know that police violence is a thing. And we know that people get murdered, and we know that like systematic oppression has always been a thing. And I mean, I feel like we already know that, and what we need is more just like joy and mm-hmm. love, and like able to just be ourselves and like relax and like not have to just be so drained all the time. So my Instagram, I kind of just want it to be like another joyful yeah. type thing, you know? But I do also post about activist related things, because it's also just a thing that I'm into,
right?
But I try for it to not overcome what I do, because primarily I want my Instagram to be like a source of joy and right. fun, and to like make people feel good, because we're going to get the news from somewhere else. Like, that doesn't have to come from me. But if I do know a thing that can be amplified and that I'm able to amplify, I do that. So from the Instagram, I kind of just think about what can I do that can make an impact, and then I post that. But if I feel like it's just me relaying a story that we all know already, then I'll just refrain, because I know that people are already seeing it.
That's very smart. And yeah. I think that that's a hard balance, because I'm an empathetic person mm-hmm. to the, like, to a fault, mm-hmm. where I'm almost an emotional sponge and I can't control the emotions that I absorb. Mm-hmm. So just kind of regurgitating the same info over and over again does get so draining, because mm-hmm. you're not going to see change
yeah.
when you just regurgitate, because mm-hmm. it is being fed from other places. Mm-hmm. And I think that using your platform in a way that brings joy mm-hmm. is actually helping the community, because you're kind of giving them balance, you know, like mm-hmm. you're giving people the ability to say, okay, I know that this is existing, but I can seek joy from a place that is coming from another woman of color, mm-hmm. that's coming from a place where I'm supporting you, mm-hmm. and it's coming from a place where I'm supporting a person who's not a shit person, right? Like, that, I think that's the biggest part. And your contribution to the greater society is mm-hmm. like, it's almost like cruelty-free makeup. You know, like when you buy cruelty-free makeup, you're like, okay, I can feel good wearing this because I know it didn't hurt anybody. That's how I feel watching or consuming your type of media is it's just like when I'm on your page, I know it's like cruelty-free cartoons and animations or, you know, illustrations. It's just really getting the opportunity to be joyful without like waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah.
You know, like there's so much content out there that you're like, okay, but when is this person going to fuck up?
Yeah. Or like, when is this person going to show their secret racism?
Yes. 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 And that's really hard for me because I'm white and I follow white people and a lot of the time I'm just like unfollow, like, bitch, why do you suck? Like, why do white people suck so much? And like, I try to call them out on it as often as I can while being like educated myself, because I don't think it's correct to call people out if you are not actually researching and doing the work to know, like, you can't just call people out without giving a solution as well.
Yeah.
Right. Like, cause if you tell people that they're wrong, like, and you don't know how to be right, then you're part of the problem.
Yeah.
So I'm just like constantly calling out white people and like unfollow. And honestly, like, I went to your page and I was like, who did she follow? Because that's where I can really find like more catharsis, because I feel like you vetted them. So I appreciate you for that. And know that your content is like a source of joy that's cruelty free. So I feel like we need a badge for you, like not just verified on Instagram, but like cruelty free verification. So we know that like you can come here and you can enjoy this content without contributing to the world being a shittier place. There should be more of that. And I think that like your circle of people and Haley and Samantha as well, I think that that's really the joy that you bring to Instagram, which is such an echo chamber of shittiness.
Yeah.
So I hope everyone starts to follow you if they aren't already, because that's, I think, the most valuable part of being an illustrator or a comic artist on Instagram.
Yeah.
Speaking of those two terms, is there a correct term? Do you go by only illustrator? Do you say that you draw comics? Is there a difference to you?
So I usually say artist.
Okay.
And it's kind of taken me a long time to come to that term, because I feel like artist has a lot of, I don't know, just like connotations and also like weight, and I'm just like, I'm just doodling stuff, I don't know. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of now say I'm an artist, because I feel like there was another artist who did a post last year, Haley Bates, who did a post about calling yourself an artist and everyone should read it. And she kind of just explain that if you create stuff, like, you are an artist, like, you made art.
Yeah,
I don't really call myself a comic artist, because I do other stuff besides the comics, and
it's limiting.
I'm fine with any label, like.
What was it like telling people for the first time that you were an artist versus a project manager when you decided to actually flip that switch in your mind?
Well, it happened like last week.
Okay.
It's taken
long time. Round of applause and congratulations. I'm so proud of you. You deserve it.
But yeah, I don't know. It just was weird to kind of come into the term.
First, you have to realize it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the hardest part.
For sure. Yeah, especially considering that like throughout my life, I kind of thought that I was going to go down a different career path than like this was very different. I've been drawing my whole life. Like, I've been a creative person my whole life, and my dad was a hobbyist painter, and I just really wanted to be like my dad, so I was like, I'm gonna get into painting too. So I've been creative my whole life, but I've never really seen that as being a part of my identity, because I've also always been into like science and history, and I was just like, okay, these are things that, I don't know, I guess like society kind of values more or values differently, which is just dumb. It's like really terrible. Like, you can't live in the world without art. Like, everything is art. Everything had to be created by a creative person.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of just like also reevaluating how I thought about art has kind of led me to here, where I can be like, yes, I am an artist, and the things that I do are valuable and provide value to the world in a way that's different than I thought I was going to do, but not less than.
Yeah.
That, you know?
There is a new Netflix special out, and I'm an asshole for not remembering her name, but an amazing comedian who studied art history in college.
Nanette.
Oh my God, did you watch it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so that was fucking amazing to me. And what I think is so interesting is that we kind of, this sounds unrelated, but in my brain, they are completely related. Mm-hmm. We kind of separate, you know, like science, biology, mathematics, business. Mm-hmm. Those are all like, you know, left-brained or mm-hmm. right-brained, whatever the fuck side of the brain the stupid tests tell you that it is. And then creative stuff is over here. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have to be one or the other.
Yeah.
And we really devalue creative work because mm-hmm. we're like, oh, it's not hard.
Yeah.
Like science is hard. Yeah. Science you have to study. Mm-hmm. Math is hard. You have to know the formulas and how to fucking do whatever quadratic equations and fucking calculus and dumb shit like that. Mm-hmm. That's like really hard.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot of time and effort to put into studying and mm-hmm. becoming an expert in those fields. Mm-hmm. And like, you're not going to go to a doctor that's not an expert at something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we don't value art in the same way, despite the fact that 99% of the world is consuming art and 1% of the world is creating it.
Yeah.
You know, really 100% of the world is consuming art. But, mm-hmm. you know, when you're separating the two, we have these such a niche group of creators
mm-hmm.
that are really so valuable because we're all consuming this mm-hmm. all the time. And yeah. we are saying you're an expert at it because we love it. We enjoy it. We pay for it. Or we at least spend time looking at your things and on your pages. We're constantly consuming it all the time. How mm-hmm. dare we not value it the same as science?
Yeah. And it's also, I would just also like to say that yeah. in college, I took organic chemistry and oil painting at the same time. And oil painting was way harder than orgo.
Yeah.
Like, I just had to memorize stuff and then, like,
mm-hmm.
move molecules around in my head and yeah. just, like, know how to do that and memorize that. But with the oil painting class, I had to just create everything out of nothing and I spent way more time in the studio than mm-hmm. I did in the library
yeah.
to just memorize everything. And I was actually talking about this yesterday with one of my friends who is a medical professional, and she was just like, yeah, for everything that she had to do, she had to memorize it, and like there's kind of a well of information that you can pull from mm-hmm. and then like that's what you have to do. But for all of the art things that she did, like, and that I did, you have to make stuff up out of nothing.
Yes.
And that is very hard and very draining.
Yes.
And I don't know. I mean, I love science.
Yeah.
But, and like, I studied it.
Yeah.
But it's also just like a very different thing and a different set of skills that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know. Part of my life mission is to just lift up the arts.
Yeah.
Just more than it has been.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people still have this notion that art, like you said, is easy or mm-hmm. isn't as valuable or is like this frivolous thing that you can do in your downtime. But it's not true. Like
right.
everything kind of starts with art, like political activism. You need art to kind of,
yes.
you know, like draw people in, and like marketing is art, all of it's
yeah.
art, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think just as a society, we kind of have to reevaluate how we think about these things.
Yeah. And I think that from my perspective in media,
mm-hmm.
art is one of the things that they slack on.
Mm-hmm.
Art is one of the things that they're willing to spend the least amount of money on in a lot of circumstances, not in films and things, because mm-hmm. obviously the set is so important. So the art department is really important. But like mm-hmm. just on daytime talk TV shows or radio shows or, you know, BuzzFeed or whatever, mm-hmm. a lot of the time we kind of put our focus on the premise of the project, the producers and the writing, and all of those things are extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not on the same like mental wavelength as the person who is going to make the visuals for that project,
mm-hmm.
you really lose a lot of the value in it.
Yeah.
And it's the same if you flip it the opposite. If the artist is working their fucking ass off and being so creative and pulling from this really deep place and really getting there mm-hmm. and doing the work, and the writer isn't, that's mm-hmm. like a fucking slap in the face, you know? So I
yeah.
do want to see so much more value on art, because you can tell a story so deeply
mm-hmm.
with a photo or a drawing or an illustration or a painting, whatever it might be, whatever mm-hmm. medium you use, that you can't say with words. There are just some things that you can't express with words. So have mm-hmm. you felt like using your art kind of got you through some particular situations that you maybe couldn't have verbalized?
The comics definitely helped me kind of express my anxiety in ways that like I haven't been able to really verbalize. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's just easy to kind of show it in a yeah. drawing. And yeah, anytime that I'm feeling really depressed or like grief-stricken, I do a drawing or a painting kind of expressing it, and it definitely shows it more. Because it's also just hard to put these hard feelings into words, you know? Like, there are definitely limitations in your words. Like, when you're feeling this, like, deep soul, whole body feeling, it's hard to express that without, like, worrying about, like, seeming overdramatic or, yeah, like, you know, whatever. And, yeah, I've definitely been able to express all of that in drawings way more than I have been in words.
As far as content that you consume and makes you feel seen, where do you go for that?
I follow a lot of artists on Instagram, so definitely there. I don't know. I read a lot of memoirs.
Oh my God, wait.
I love memoirs and autobiographies and biographies and, like, documentaries about people. I'm just, like, very, very into people's stories. And I love a good underdog story and, like, an underdog rise to success story. So I usually get replenished just, like, reading those or watching those. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of just consume a lot of other people's stories, and I kind of, like, see the things that they've been through, and it kind of helps me because I'm just like, okay, this is chapter four of their book. This can also be chapter four of my life. Like, you know, like, I'm not there yet. So that definitely helps and just helps me out when I'm feeling just down, like, career-wise.
I think that that's why I love your Instagram so much, because it's like a little memoir, you know, like, even if it's only small snippets, and obviously you're only sharing the information that you want people to see. But I think that that's why I love memoirs so much. And I would love to know more about, like, why you're interested in them, because I was just talking about this with my interns at work the other day. They asked me some of my favorite books, and I don't really read fiction, because to me, fiction is wonderful and it's beautiful and they can take you to places unseen or unthought of anywhere else. But it's more of the unthought of real moments that happened in other people's lives that I haven't had access to, that you can have access to through a book or a documentary or a song or a piece of art that they created, where you almost can, like, absorb the energy that they felt at that point in time. And that, I feel like, really motivates me to get through life. It's like, oh, yes, someone else had this other horrible parental experience or this other gut-wrenching job situation, and they're successful. You know, it really does push you forward, because you're like, fuck it, Oprah got fired from her first job in TV when she was 23. Like, I haven't gotten fired from anything yet. I'm doing okay, you know? So what is that like for you when you're reading them, and what moments inspire you? You know, like, for me, you said underdog. For me, I read a lot of chef memoirs. So I like the... I like knowing the process of becoming a chef is very similar. You have to really put in a lot of time apprenticing. You have to put in a lot of time at, like, shitty restaurants, then good restaurants, then amazing restaurants. Then you get to be a sous chef at, or a line cook at, some, you know, Michelin starred restaurant. But it's the points of failure in those moments that those chefs really learn from. And that's where I draw my inspiration from, is, like, acknowledging that failure is a part of the journey, and it's the crucial part of the journey. So what, what moments for you really do you grab from those stories?
Kind of the similar type of thing. Like, I definitely really enjoy just, like, seeing the things that people learn from their failure. And it's also enlightening to see that a failure is just part of the whole process. You know, like, everyone who has done great things has failed more times than they've succeeded. And that's also just really good to see, and a really good idea to reinforce, you know, to just, like, see that these people have failed so many times, and you just need, like, one or two really big wins, and then you're considered a success, and all the other times, like, you were considered a failure, you know? So I like those parts, and I also like to see the unconventional things that people do, like, or just, like, the reaching out that people have to do to get to where they are. And that's also just been, like, a giant new realization too that I'm coming into. It's kind of just like, to get to anywhere, you have to ask for it. Like, you can make the best things in the world, and, like, you can be a genius, but if you don't talk to people and, like, reach out to people, no one's gonna know about any of that. And there is a saying that a closed mouth doesn't get fed, that I've been really just trying to internalize. Like, if I don't put out there what I want from the world, like, no one can read my mind. So those parts of the stories I've also really enjoyed, to just, like, see the people in the stories, like going out there and the things that they had to do to get where they are, you know? Like they're not just like sitting there doing stuff and then like someone knocks on their door and they're just like, hey, here's all of your money and all of
here's
yours.
A great job. Yeah. You have to believe in yourself in order for other people to believe in you. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to sell yourself. So okay. Can you give us your social media where we can find you and where people can hire you if they want to hire you for work?
Yeah.
As well as any final words of inspiration, any statements you want to make to the world, to your haters or to your lovers, whatever it might be, the floor is yours.
Okay. Well, you can find me across social media at Yeah, It's Chill. So that's Yeah, Y-E-A-H, It's Chill. My website is also yeahitschill.com. And if you would like to reach out to me for work, my email address is yeahitschill@gmail.com. There's also a link on my Instagram account and on my website and on everything. I would like to say to everyone listening to this, thank you. I love you for listening. And a last bit of advice would probably be, I don't know, just whatever you want to do, you can make that happen for yourself, you know? Like, even if there's no one out there that looks like you or does the same thing as you, like, you can do the thing that you want to do, basically.
Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Mike Tedesco for our theme song, and a big thanks to Christine for participating in this week's episode. Please check out her site and follow her on Instagram, but while you're there, follow us too to stay up to date on all things Supernormal. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, but you can go to supernormalpodcast.com for a full list of where to find us. Subscribe to Supernormal on any of the podcast apps and leave a review while you're there. It helps get the word out, and I'd love to hear what you think. Support the show by buying some merch at supernormal.threadless.com. More designs will be coming, so keep it locked, and don't forget, stay normal. Supernormal.